Okay, so are you? So you're all here for Inf 2D, right? I just want to make sure because last year when I started my lecture, a bunch of people walked out. They thought it was French, and yes. So my name is Jacques Fleurieu. So I'm also the course organizer. Some of you may know for Inf 2. So if you do have any problems with the lectures or anything, you can still come to me, even though I'm the course organizer as well. It's not a problem. And you can complain about the lecturer to me. So I'll just put on a different hat. So before we start, one thing I need to do is to ask some people, a few people, to volunteer to be the course representative. So we need at least two people. And you have any volunteer? One? Anybody else? Two? Any more? No? Well, I don't know if any more people come. So can you guys send me, so you did, right? And you? Can you send me an email with your names and, well, and your email? I'll get your email so that I can actually put that on the webpage. Thanks very much. So, and once it's on the webpage, you guys know who your course representatives are. So if ever there's any issue, right, you can come to me directly. You can always email me if there's any problem, something's not clear, something's not, you're not happy with. But if you don't want to do this, you can always go through your course representative, you know, if you feel this is, you know, you want them to go and talk to me, come and talk to me over the tea or whatever, you can always do that. So, right. So one thing about this course, so that I should say, is that there will be, so as you know, this consists of 30 lectures, right? So it's divided in two parts. I'll be teaching the first part, which is, consists of around 15 lectures, maybe one or two less. And there'll be a second part, which is going to be taught by Alex Lascaridis. And the two parts are complementary. They don't really overlap, right? So there are going to be two assignments in total, one in my part and one for the second part, the second group of lectures. And we will have TAs attached to these to the course, meaning that there will be people available in the labs, for instance, for the assignments and all this. And the assignment will count for 25% for each. There'll be two exams, so for each of these parts, this will count for 25%. And another thing I should say, you know, since I'm already, you know, it's the first lecture, already talking about exams, so our course, this course will, in most, very likely will have, oh, actually, I'm pretty sure we'll have multiple choice component, which has been the case for the past few years, so which means that in terms of revision and all this, you know, it'll be pretty much doing past papers, for instance, will be pretty much it, and we'll cover more or less the same kind of, it'll give you a good idea of what to expect, okay? So what else should I talk about right now? Well, you know, if I miss anything today, it's okay, we'll come back to this. So there will be a lecture, for instance, on the course, on the actual assignment that will be attached to this course. Well, there'll be two lectures, one for each part. So there will be demonstrators available as well. And of course, you do know that there are tutorials attached to this course, right? And it's quite important that actually that you do turn up for the tutorials and that you prepare in advance. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard this all from all the other lecturers anyway. But, you know, it's for your own benefit. So, any questions? No? So, here's one thing that would be quite nice, right? So if you do ever have questions during the lectures, feel free to interrupt me. If I'm speaking a bit too fast, feel free to tell me because sometimes I get a little bit carried away. And if I can't answer your question, it can happen. So like, I only came back last night after 20 hours on the road, so I'm still a bit jet lagged. So please, you know, don't view this as, you know, I'm not interested or I can't answer it. You know, sometimes it can happen that you're trying to answer something and you just have a blank, even though I've taught this course for quite a few years now. Okay, so shall we start? All right. So, as you probably know, this particular INF2D course is about intelligent agents and reasoning. So, what we're going to do today is more of a kind of setting, you know, just setting the scene a little bit, just talk a bit about what we mean by intelligent agents and also what it means to have an environment in which these things work, right? So it's quite, it's very conceptual. There's nothing that's going to be very deep about today's lecture, but it sets the scene and there are some things in there that you should be aware of, you know, that the obvious types of agents, for instance, and the environments in which they work will determine what sort of agent, for instance, you may need, right? So we'll see this. And feel free to ask questions. So, we're going to go for something which is basically, this is, oh, one thing I should mention. So with each, I'm not going to give out lecture notes, right? So it's because these things can change just after the lecture. So it's up to you to grab the slides from the webpage. And it follows quite closely, unlike some of the other courses, this one follows quite closely Russell and Norvig with some extra stuff, for instance, in some of the accompanying textbooks. So it's really important that you do read from Russell and Norvig because, you know, this course doesn't deviate too much from it. If it ever does, there will be extra pointers to other things. If I ever go for something which is completely out of it, out of Russell and Norvig, then the material will be made available on the webpage, for instance. So it is quite important that you have a copy or at least that you can get one from the library that you can look at and read, because you know it's not enough to just sit in front of this and imagine that the whole story is there. There's a lot of extra stuff that goes on in the textbook. So the textbook is actually essential. So, and the terminology that we're going to use will follow quite closely what happens in the book, right? So the general idea of an intelligent agent is going to have something which, you know, which is going to perceive its environment, right? So, and how does it do this? It's going to do this through some notion of, you know, through sensors of some kind, right? A sensor could be, for instance, if you're talking about a robot or a car or whatever, it could be a camera, for instance, right? So that could be one of its sensors. So its environment would be wherever, you know, for instance, if you have an agent here, the lecture theater will be its environment, but also not just physical. So people can be also part of the environment, right? And it could be things to do with temperature. It could be something to do with the amount of light and all these kind of things, right? And what it's going to try and do usually is to achieve a number of goals, right? It could have only one goal, but very often it could have a number of these, right? And what we're going to see is that not all of these goals are, you know, some of these can be mutually exclusive sometimes. There may be choices, right? You may have a choice between doing this and doing that, and how does the agent decide which one to pick, right? And that's not necessarily clear. And the way it acts on its environment, usually, it's going to do something, and there's going to be some action of some kind via actuators. You know, this is just some terminology. Sometimes it's all known as effectors, so it's not that important, but, you know, it's just what we're going to use, or if you ever see this is what it means, right? So this is the general idea, very simple thing, right? An agent perceives its environment, right? It through its senses, you know, it has goals that it needs to achieve, and it's going to, you know, based on the goal that it has, for instance, it's going to come up with some action that's going to be acting on its environment through actuators, okay? So nothing too complicated here. That's the sort of kind of general structure, right? So here are simple examples of agent. You know, we could say one is a mail sorting robot, right? Just to pick a trivial example, well, relatively trivial. So what the agent is just a mail sorting robot. We'll assume that you know what this does. So its environment, for instance, can be just a conveyor where you have like letters going on this, so conveyor belt of letters, right? So, and its goal will be to just automatically route these letters into the correct bin, right? So, you know, particular areas or whatever based on the postcode, right, for instance. And what does it do? It needs to come up with some way, you know, it's going to have a sensor of some kind that's going to try and figure out what's going on, and it's going to perceive, for instance, for a camera, right, an array of pixel intensities. It could be by reading barcodes or, you know, whatever, right? And this is going to be the percept. And the action will just be to route the letters to the appropriate bin. That's just a very simple idea, right? You can come up with almost anything and describe it as an agent, right? So you just need to say, okay, environment, goals, percept, actions. That's one example, right? Another example could be an intelligent house of some kind. You hear about this in the news sometimes. I think Bill Gates has one or something like that. So what's the environment? In this case, as you can see, the environment can also be the occupants who enter and leave the house, right? you know, people who live in there, for instance, right? And occupants also who enter and leave the rooms inside the house, right? And what else do we have? We can have daily variation in outside light and temperature, right? Could be also to do with the wind, whatever, right? So these could be things. It could be example. This doesn't characterize the environment fully, right? It's just giving you some idea of what its environment is like, right? You know, it could be there's rain. There could be all sorts of other things, right? And one of its goals, just to name a few, I can make this up, right? So to keep the, obviously keep the occupants comfortable in some way or another. So keep them warm, for instance, right? And make sure that lights are on when the room is occupied. So I don't know if any of you have been in the informatics forum. You've been in there, I'm guessing, right? So the lights are supposed to be relatively intelligent. The building has some intelligence, but it's not that intelligent. So, you know, it's supposed to detect if there's no motion and the lights switch off eventually. But sometimes if you're just there at the keyboard and you're just your hands moving, after a while it just switches the light automatically. So, you know, you're sitting there and just because you're only moving your hands and, you know, there's no detection of movement, you're in the dark suddenly. And then you need to do like this to just get it to start, to just switch the light on, which doesn't always work either. So then you have to go and press the switch. So, you know, there's kind of things, and for instance, it could be like, you know, house energy efficient, just make sure that it's energy efficient, for instance, and things like that, right? So, you know, these are just goals that you can make up. You know, if I tell you, you know, come up with an intelligent notion of an intelligent house, you can come up with these things. And what are its percepts? So, for instance, it can be, you know, detecting what the temperature is, so some kind of thermostat or whatever, you know, something signals from its temperature sensor of some kind. Right? Movement sensor, like I said, you know, could be a clock, you have some notion of time, you know, and sound sensor, whatever, right? So these are just its various percepts that it can have through the various, you know, it's slightly overloaded here. Sound sensor, it's more like the sounds that it can sense, right? So that's the percept itself. And the actions would be to switch on the heater, you know, switch it off or whatever, lights on, off, etc. Shut door, whatever. Have you seen this? So more and more these new cars, you know, if you forget to lock it, you know, you've closed all the doors, eventually it locks itself, you've removed the key from the ignition. So these are all kind of things. You know, a bit of intelligence, not very intelligent, but there's a little bit of things like that, right? So this is just example of agents, nothing too complicated in this case, right? Another one, keep going. So there's a notion of an automatic car, for instance, one which is all known, also known as driverless car. So its environment could be like streets or other vehicles, pedestrians, traffic signals, lights, signs, dogs, whatever, right? And what are its goals? Its goals may be to get from A to B in a safe way, fast way, and in a legal way as well. So as you can see, right, so these two goals are not necessarily compatible, right? We all know this. If you ever, if you drive or even use your bike, you know, trying to get somewhere fast doesn't mean necessarily that it's, you're going to be safe, right? If you're speeding, for instance. And its percept can be through the camera. It can also have GPS signals, you know, if it needs to know where it is, you know, some global positioning, and speedometer, sonar, whatever. So just to know, you know, how far it is from another vehicle, for instance, right? And the actions might be to steer, accelerate, brake, whatever, right? And for you, for those of you who are interested, this is not too far-fetched, right? So I don't know if you've ever heard of the DARPA Grand Challenge. Have you ever heard of this? It's like this thing about driverless cars, and they have this they've had this competition over the past few years. And we're trying to get cars from, you have various universities, for instance, that take part in this. And they try to get these cars, they race among themselves and all this, and they try to get from a particular point to another point completely automatically, right? And involves steering and everything. So I think Google even has some kind of, Google is trying to do everything. So I think Google has a notion of a project called the driverless car as well, where they've actually been able to do a lot of things with some of their cars without any accident. So. Anyway, so you should check this out. There's some interesting stuff going on there, right? So these are just examples, anyway. So, okay, so having said this, let's go a little bit more in detail and look at some of possible agents. So the simplest, one of the simplest one you can have is what's known as a simple reflex agent, right? So this is really as dumb as it gets in a way, right? So what it does, it's going to decide its action only on the immediate percepts, right? Based on what it perceives, it's going to decide what to do immediately, right? So it's a simple reflex agent because it's supposed to be just like a, you know, touching a hot stove and removing your hand from it immediately, nothing else, right? So, you know, just like a immediate reflex. So, and this is usually implemented by what are known as condition action rules, right? This is just a name, right? Condition action rules doesn't mean that it's supposed to be like by a rule. It could be like something like a Boolean circuit. It could be something which is like done using flip-flops or whatever, hardware. Base, whatever, right? But this is what it's usually called, right? Condition action rules. So it means there'll be a condition based on this, know, it's going to be triggered, there's going to be an action. And here's a simple example. You have a mail sorting robot again, right? Its environment is the cover letter of bells. And an example of a rule given in sort of pseudo logic is like, if the city is equal to Edinburgh, if the city is Edinburgh, then put the letter in the Scotland bag or route it towards a Scotland bin, right? Just to give a really trivial example, right? So that's a notion of a simple reflex agent. It just really figures out this needs to go to Edinburgh, route in this direction towards Scotland bin, right? So, and we can show this sort of diagrammatically like this. So this is like from Russell and Norvig, right? So where we have, we're just going to say, here's the environment, and the ovals are usually going to represent something which is internal, something that's persistent, and everything else is going to be is going to try and determine something. So here we go. So it's the environment, it has its sensors, it says, okay, what is the world like now, just now? And based on this, using my set rules, right, I'm going to decide what I'm going to do next. That's all, right? Based on the percept, I perceive something. This is basically means it's going to Edinburgh. I do something immediately based on that, right? And so we're given in sort of pseudocode. So this is going, you're going to see a lot of this kind of pseudocode. So this is also from Russell and Norvig, right? So one thing I'm going to say is that most of these things, if they are on the slides, means you need to be able to, you need to understand this and be able to reproduce this if you're asked in the exam. One thing I'm going to say is that you don't have to do it in exactly this kind. It's not like you have to completely memorize it. What you have to do is to understand it and be able to give something that looks a bit like this. You know, even if you decide, you know, I'm not going to call mine interpret input, I'm going to call it int input or inter input or whatever, as long as it's clear, right? So that's what I mean. So, you know, or if you change the pseudocode slightly, you don't use an arrow and you use double colon equal or whatever you use for assignment, that's not a problem. So as long as when it comes to pseudocode, you give something that I can read, you know, when marking and say, okay, this is basically, you know, it's pseudocode, right? It's not code. So as I can understand what's going on and it's more or less telling me exactly the same thing as, you know, for instance, this, I'll be happy with that. So what I'm trying to say is that don't consider it compulsory for you to memorize this just exactly like this, right? So bear that in mind. So what's important is that you understand what's going on. So a simple reflex agent is only going to take a percept and just return an action. And the way they work this is like this, right? So you say, okay, what's persistent? It used to be, you know, called static before in the previous version of Russell and Norvig. They say, okay, this is persistent. This is something that's like already known by the agent, already encoded into it. It's the set of rules, right? Set of condition action rules. So that could be stored as an array of or whatever, right? So what it does, it just comes up with a notion of state, right? So by interpreting its percept and say, okay, this is what it is. And then it just says, okay, let's look at the rules. What does this state trigger? And what rule does it trigger? It's this particular rule. And let's find what the action that's attached to this rule, right? That's all it does. It's really, really trivial. And just return that action, right? So what is the problem with this, right? I mean, should this, why isn't this good enough for everything?
Doesn't store the history of actions.
Yeah, doesn't know anything about what's gone on before, right? It assumes that everything it does is based on the present, now. And we all know that's not always the case, right? So, you know, the fact that, you know, maybe in this case for the mail sorting robot, that's perfectly fine. Given that this letter is going to Edinburgh, doesn't mean the next one also has to go to Edinburgh. It doesn't have any bearing necessarily on that one. Of course, unless you know there's some history that there's going to be 10 letters going to Edinburgh, then maybe, you know, it's easier for you to just say, okay, I'm just going to count 10 letters after this if you know they're coming in one after the other. But it doesn't know anything about this. It just does it one at a time. It only knows about the present and what it sees, right? So nothing about what it did before, you know, and that's the problem, right? It's not good enough for most situations, and we all know this. Any of you seen Memento? Yeah? Right, so in Memento, the guy doesn't, well, at least he has some memory, but not quite. But he tries to manufacture it, at least by writing things on his body and all this, but it all gets really jumbled. But imagine if you had no short-term memory, no memory whatsoever, and you can't remember. Well, actually, maybe some, I'll be careful. So, yeah, just imagine if you can't, everything I've told you, you forget immediately. Maybe I shouldn't go there anyway. So, You have forgotten everything I said already, haven't you? So what this means is that we need to have something. Well, it doesn't mean that we absolutely need. It depends on the problem, right? So the mail sorting robot, for instance, you could say, you know, a simple reflex agent is enough. But usually, you know, for tackling more complicated problem where you need to know what you've done in the past and that has a bearing, or, you know, you need to have come up with something which is a bit more sophisticated. So because the action may depend on the history, or even more, you know, well, not even more, but also an important thing is that there might be unperceived aspects of the world. So what this is saying is that it's not always possible to see everything, right? Maybe you perceive this, but maybe there are bits that are not perceived, that are implicit. So how do you deal with these things, right? So I can see all of you there, but there are things that are implicit. Maybe some of you are, you know, looking at me while sleeping, or you've got a computer in front of you, and I'm not sure what you're doing. I could assume that you're looking at the lecture slides, but maybe you're not, right? So who knows, right? So, you know, there are things that I can't see, there are things that I can see, there are things that I can't see, and we need to be able to take care of these, right? So then what happens is that we can maintain what's known as an internal model of the world, or just a model of the world, right? Some kind of way of representing what the world is like. Of course, not going to be perfect, right, either, right? It's going to be a representation, right? So we need to have this. So this is when we move to what's known as model-based agents, or model-based reflex agents. So sometimes this reflex bit is removed there. Right? So here's an example. We could have a vacuum cleaner that's, you know, supposed to be going around the room, you know, to clean it, you know, just sucking up dirt and all this. So the environment would be like a dirty room, furniture, etc., etc. But of course, you do want this vacuum cleaner to stop at some point, right? If it has no model of the world, it can just keep going and never stopping. So what you would like is that some kind of map of the room, for instance, right? Or various rooms or whatever, and know which areas are already clean, whether it's a very coarse thing where, you know, it takes a room and just splits it into, you know, into coordinates or into squares, right? Into a grid, for instance. But some kind of internal model, it could be quite crude, it could be quite advanced, where it has notions of what furnitures are around and all this. So then what it has to be able to go around the room and remember which bits already visited and basically decide, okay, I've already done that, I have to stop. So that, you know, it doesn't go on forever. And what happens then, once you start having these kind of things, that you can start having a trade-off between the model, you know, is it a perfect model, and the sensor, because maybe, you know, your internal model of the world means you've already cleaned this, right, and you think, okay, that's done. But what if someone else walked in and put more dirt there, right? So what happens then? Right, your sensor may be saying something, and your internal model of the world may be saying, well, once it's clean, it stays clean forever. Well, we all know that's not true, right? And as your mum will probably tell you, you know, whenever she's clean anywhere. So, but anyway, so then there are all these kind of aspects that have to be taken into account. Hey. Oh. So, okay, so here's another diagrammatic representation for this one. So we could say what you can see now, we have this notion there of a state that's going to be updated there. So the world is like, but you also need to know what sort of things your actions can do, right? So that's going to be new. So it's like looking a little bit into the future to figure out, you know, what is it that my action can do, right? What they do. And, you know, based on the condition action rules again here, I'm going to decide what to do then. Right, so here's a little bit of pseudocode again here. So again, it takes a percept, it's going to return an action. But now there's more thing going on inside the agent. So it has a state that describes what it believes to be the current state of the world, right? But it also has some kind of model of the world, right? Which is a description of how the next state depends on the current state, right? You should know this, right? It depends on the current state and the action, right? So based on this, it's going to come up with what the model is like. So this describes it like this, right? And it still has a set of rules, right? And the action is going to be also stored. It's also going to try and remember the most recent action. Initially, there's nothing, right? So what it does now, right, based on the percept, before it only took the percept, now what it's going to try and do is going to try and say, okay, what is the state? Based on the current state, right? So what it believes the world to be like, based on the action that it's going to do as well, what would happen then? What was the most recent action that it did, sorry, and the percept, and this is going to try and come up. It's going to try and figure out what is going on, what is the state that I should be in based on all this, right? What is going to be my state, right? So it's got the state, the current state, what it thinks the world is, the model that describes how things are supposed to evolve or change, and the action that it's going, that it did last, and also what it perceives, right? So now once it's done this, you know, this bit is basically the same as before. It tries to find a rule based on its set of rules that it has, and it finds what action is attached to this. The bit that is important is this. That's what's changed. There's more going on there. And then it just returns the action. Any question? No? Does this make sense, generally? It's nothing, you know, well, it's easy to say it's nothing too complicated. In a way, nothing is too complicated here. But, you know, it's just an evolution on the previous one, right? Where you had like these two things, and it was just like, what I see, do something. This time, I need to know what I do is going to have, what effect it may have, what the state is, and what, you know, what the model of the world is. Okay? Well, that's all very good, so, but as we know, things don't stop there, right? Because, you know, usually there will be something else involved. Most of us, when we're trying to do something, we usually have a goal in mind, usually, right? So very often, so what we've seen so far are agents that are fixed, implicit goals, right? They're just implicit. And what we want are to have agents that can have variable goals. It's done a goal, so once it's done something, it can do something else, for instance, right? Or it could be based on the situation, decide what is the best goal, what is the thing to do next, right? So, or it could have just a number of these things to do. It doesn't do one thing only, right? So what we're going to see, so I'm just mentioning this, we're going to see this notion of forming plans later on in order to achieve goals. So this is something that we'll look at later on, how these agents go about forming these plans that will enable them, or at least in theory, to achieve particular goals, right? So here's another example. Just instead of having just a vacuum cleaner, now you have something which is a bit more realm of fantasy, I guess, some kind of maid that's going to have work in the house with people. And, you know, maybe it's going to try and clean clothes, tidy your room, table, get the table laid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very trivial. I mean, very science fiction-like kind of thing. But that's a possibility, right? But it has a number of goals, right? So that's the notion of a goal-based agent. It also has things to achieve, right? There is it. Okay. So I could represent this diagrammatically like this. Now we have something which is very similar to before. You know, you can see all these things, but there's also this bit there. It's not just going to do whatever action. It needs to do some action based on what it's trying to achieve, the goal it's trying to achieve. So it's going to influence what it's trying to do. So if it's some kind of car, you know, instead of driving aimlessly, you know, driverless, you can do that, right? It has person. But maybe it's been told, you know, you need to figure out how to go from, you know, Edinburgh to Glasgow, for instance, right? So it has a goal to get to Glasgow, as opposed to just being able to drive, you know, randomly anywhere, just and not kill anybody, right? So anyway, right? So right. So but that's not enough. So I'm going a bit more quickly because some of this, you know, we won't be part of my part of the lecture. So they're going to be part of Alex Lascaridi's part, for instance. So I don't have to worry too much about it. But you know, there's something else which is known as utility-based agents. So we're going to see what's going to happen in this case. So you may assume that, for instance, an agent has a single goal, right? But you know, very often you're going to have to judge conflicting goals. And this is where it becomes quite interesting. Actually, you know, so then what you need to do is to have the notion of a utility that you're going to try and optimize over a range of goals, right? So what is the utility? Right, so notion of utility, so it's a well-defined concept, right? So it's based on decision theory and all this, right? And the utility is going to be a measure of the goodness of a state, you know. So it's going to tell how good it is to be in a particular state. It's going to try and figure out the utility of doing this, of being that state, in that state, in that state, in that state, and then based on the utility, based on the notion of maximizing the utility, for instance, it's going to pick the one that's going to be more better for it, right? So, but it's not just this. So it's what happens is that it gets combined with the probability of success. So, you know, maybe it's a very useful, you know, your utility of a particular goal is very high, but the chances of actually achieving it is very low, right? So it doesn't mean that, you know, because it has a high utility, for instance, for you guys, it's a high utility to pass the exam, I guess, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to pass, right? Maybe you have a low probability of passing, then you have a choice between deciding whether to go to a concert tonight, right, or in the night before the exam, or passing the exam the next day. If your probability of passing the exam is really, really, really low, even though it has a high utility, but you know, enjoying yourself has a low utility, but you have, you know, the probability that you will enjoy yourself is much higher, maybe you go to the exam, you go to the concert instead, right? Because you know you're going to fail the exam anyway. This is a bad example, isn't it? Yeah, I should turn it the other way around. Yeah, but anyway, don't go to the concert. Take the exam. That's the bottom line. So, for instance, if you take our automatic car again, the environment is the same as before: the roads, vehicles, humans, dogs, etc., etc., signs, cyclists, etc. And the goals may be to stay safe, reach the destination, be quick, obey the law, save fuel, etc., etc. And they're all going to have a range of utilities, right? And then the question is, right, which one do you pick, right? Maybe, you know, maybe you only have little money, you want to save fuel, you care about the environment, so maybe that's going to be higher utility than, you know, than being quick. It depends on the agent, right? So it doesn't mean it's got to be something that applies to all agents in the same way. Different agents have different utilities attached to different actions or to different states. So, you know, some of them may be more altruistic, you know, care more about the environment. Others may not care at all about anything. You know, they just want to get somewhere, right? And don't care about the law. You know, any of you who've played Grand Theft Auto, for instance, will know as well, right? So there's that too, right? So this is not in there. This is in there. This is definitely in there. Definitely not in there. And things like that, right? So, yes. Well, so just to give you a bit of a diagram here, so what happens now, we have this one as well, this concept of utility there, which tells you how happy will I be to be in such a state. So you need to quantify or get some idea about how happy you'll be to be in a particular state. And this gets factored into the algorithm, and just then you decide what action you should do now, right? So I won't be so covering this, but it's discussed in Russell and Norvig in chapters 16 and 17. You should read about this if you're interested, or even if you're not, if you're bored or whatever. But it's a good thing to know a little bit about these things, right? And let's move on. So there could be even more. Obviously, one thing that's quite important, right? So we want to be able, if we're talking about these agents and we want to be able to do many things, we want them also to be able to learn, right? So that's actually quite important. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the key things that we're trying to achieve when it comes to AI, right, is to have agents that can actually improve their experience or their performance in the light of experience, right? You know, they're not completely dumb, that it's all hardwired, and they don't learn from the fact that they failed, for instance, right? So what happens then in this case, very often you'll have problems that are generated that will test the performance, right? And you see this for neural networks, for instance, right? So you get to train the neural network, and then you give it like examples it's never seen before that you know the outcome, and you use this to decide, and you use this to quantify how well they're doing. So you have the notion of a development and a test set, for instance, right? And perform, you know, and then this can be used for it to change its weights that it attaches. If you don't know about this, don't worry too much, but it uses to change them, you know, how the various nodes of the neural nets are supposed to be interacting with each other to figure out how to evolve and just improve itself. So what it does then, you can have perform activities according to rules, goals, models, utilities, so you have all these things, but you monitor the performance. You know, if your car that's supposed to be driverless is supposed to get to Glasgow but always ends up, you know, in Stirling or somewhere else, hopefully you can learn from this and decide, you know, at some point I was turning right instead of turning left, right? So what are the things that you need to do? And you can identify non-optimal activity and all this. And the improvements are, you know, are identified, possible improvements are identified and are also implemented. And hopefully these are done automatically by the agent which learns, right? So it tries to figure out how to get to become better and do and perform better. So I won't be covering this, but it's also discussed in Russell and Norvig. So as you can see, you know, there's a range of things where you can go from like being really dumb to being like just a reflex agent to being more and more sophisticated, right? Actually with memory and utility and goals, and then moving on, right? And actually also having like a notion of learning, you know, because even though you have all of this, the agent may still not do quite the right thing. So if it can learn from its failures, right, and change how it behaves, this makes it even more interesting, right? Okay, any questions? No? Okay. Well, yeah, well, it's not really an exercise if you've all seen it. So consider a chess-playing program. What sort of agent would it need to be? Well, I'll give you the answer, right? Can it, well, actually, no, it's not the answer. So can it be a simple reflex agent? So one thing that I could say is that, okay, yes, maybe it could be a simple reflex agent, but no, it can't be a simple reflex agent. Because even in chess, you have some actions that require memory. Any of you play chess? Quite a few of you play chess? Yeah. So, right. So you know what this is. If you don't play chess, I'm not going to explain it. Here it is. So go and have a look. So this requires some memory of what's going on, right? So means, you know, maybe many things you could try to capture by saying, okay, I perceive what the board is like, and I try to decide, but that's not enough. But there are other things. You could probably come up with other examples why it's not enough for it to be a simple reflex agent.
Why is it not enough to be a simple reflex agent if you had stored all the
information? Yep. So here's a very good point, right? If you have stored everything, you can be a simple reflex agent. Yeah, right? So it's implicit. The memory then becomes implicit as part of the rule. So then you're still... The problem with this, so that's something I should have mentioned. That's a very good point. Your simple reflex agent, if you try and store everything that you can, you know, even that, then you get an implicit notion of a memory, right? The problem is if you have to change something, that you have to go through all the rules potentially and change a lot of things. So the thing when it happens with these rules that you realize simple reflex agent is like a database of rules that can really be quite big, can really explode very quickly, because each time you change something about the world, maybe you need to increase the number of rules exponentially, for instance. There's nothing that prevents it from being a simple reflex agent if you try to encode it as part of the rule. You can.
Because, for example, table is a function that principle for
yep.
Just
absolutely. The problem, as we'll see, so this is also linked to like the notion of representation and reasoning when we're talking about propositional logic and all this. We'll see this later, depending on the type of agent, that, yeah, you can get things to be represented as huge tables. Look, there are also some other problems with this, also to do with lookup, for instance, right? So then you come with performance, there could be also other issues, for instance. But one of the biggest problems is that to make changes to such an agent, it's like you have to go through it, you know, line by line, all the table, all the rules, and decide, is this rule affected? Is this rule changed? How many new rules do I need to add? Absolutely. Whereas you keep a more abstract model of the world, say as a function, as a program of some kind, hopefully you can compute what's going to happen. So you don't have to do just look up and come up with everything. And yes, so model-based reflex agent, but obviously when you're playing chess, you need to also reason about not just the immediate future, but also the long-term, more long-term future. So you need to be a bit more there, right? And is it a goal-based agent? Well, one could say it is, right? It has only one goal, which is checkmate, right? Checkmating your opponent, right? So the opponent of it. But, of course, the problem is, right, is that you can't really, in general, if you're an agent playing chess, you can't see the whole, you can't see everything. The problem is, you know, if you're an automatic agent, and usually it's going to be trying looking through the search space, it's only going to see a part of the search space. So then the problem is that, you know, when it's explored a particular part of the tree, it's going to have multiple goals usually, because it can only do a limited look ahead, because it's such an expensive process, right? There's no way you're going to go through the whole tree. Well, we'll see examples of how deep these trees are when we're looking at search and all this, right? So then what happens is that it can become a utility-based agent, because based on doing a search to a particular depth, if we take a very simple chess-playing agent, right? So it looks at this and it has a number of things it could do, then it's a question of what utility is attached to each one of these particular moves and being in a particular state, right? So because when you have limited look ahead like this, right? And we'll see something in a second as well, right? So let me move on a bit more quickly. So that was a bit about the various types of agents, but like I said, the agents have to work in a particular environment, and what happens is that depending on the environment, things may not be, you know, that will also influence what type of agent you may have. Right? And also things may not be quite as easy to deal with depending on the environment. Some of them are very easy to deal with and others are not. And you have a combination of these. And so here are some classification of environments. Right? So one would be, for instance, a fully observable environment versus a partially observable. Right? So something which should be obvious to you. Maybe you can see, you know, we take a particular environment which is very restricted, then you can see everything. So the agent sensor is going to describe the environment fully. Right? So what sort of agent would you want to have for this, if the sensor can describe the environment fully? You know, what's good enough? Simple reflex is good enough, because you perceive everything. There's nothing hidden, right? So hopefully you can just use this and just fire up the appropriate rule, right? And of course, you know, so you can take something where, you know, if you decide that chess itself is fully observable, you can sense everything that's going on the chessboard, right? So that's fully. But, you know, you can turn this into something where you say, okay, the agent is going to be crippled in some way, and suddenly it becomes partially observable, right? It needs to have hands to try and figure out what is going on, or use some kind of shape detection or whatever, try and figure out what the pieces are, where they are, right? So playing chess with a blindfold, just to make up an example where you can change something which is fully observable into partially observable. Right? Okay, so that's one thing. So if your environment is fully observable, things are usually quite nice, right? So a simple reflex agent can do a lot of things in that kind of environment, right? So here's another thing. It could be that your environment is deterministic, right? It could be deterministic or non-deterministic, or also known as stochastic. So a deterministic environment means that the next state is going to be fully determined by the current state and the agent's action. Right, so which is quite nice. You would, you know, if you can determine what the next state is going to be like based on the current state and what the agent is going to do, This is pretty good, right? So if you can tell that this is going to be like this, this letter is going to be in that bin after I've done this, and that's all that's going to happen, that's great. But hey, what happens if suddenly you have people playing tricks, right? So, you know, a rogue mail sorting that starts moving things out and moving them into different bins, what, that wouldn't be too good. So, oh, another example, you know, if you're playing chess and, you know, in a strong wind or whatever, and things start moving on the board or on the ship or whatever, right? So then things become more and more complicated, right? So things are stochastic. So, and one thing to bear in mind is this, that's quite important. So an environment may appear stochastic if it is only partially observable, right? If there are things that I can't see, right? If my environment is not fully observable, there are things that can make it appear stochastic because I can't see them, but they have an effect, right? So that's something. So the environment itself could be fully deterministic just because the camera is always pointed in that direction, right? But there's something else that may be moving things there, right? If I had cameras in all directions, maybe I would be able to, I'd be able to see my whole environment. But just because I'm focused, I can only see a little bit, doesn't mean that the environment itself is stochastic. Do you see what I mean? Right? So there's something else, if, you know, the environment is deterministic, things are happening, if I can see everything, right, then I would be able to tell exactly what's going on. I would, my senses would describe the environment fully. But because maybe I only have a limited field of vision or I only see in a particular direction, things may be happening that are perfectly deterministic, but which to me, because they suddenly just pop up, appears to make it appear stochastic. Okay? So that's important to bear that in mind. So that's like a limitation, you know, see, because it's only partially observable for some reason, then makes it appear stochastic. Right? So the other thing that you can have are episodic versus sequential environments. Right, so what this means is that the next episode, you know, things can be broken down, you know, it's like frames in a movie, right? So the next episode does not depend on the actions in the previous episode, right? So it's like, see this, nothing, you know, there's no relation. So any of you who've watched any American series know those which are, have no relation, one episode has no relation to the next episode, but then you have those with huge narrative arcs, right? Like Lost and all this, right? Or, I don't know, CSI tends to be one, for instance, I don't know what you watch, but there are others which are more like, you know, you have an arc that goes through various things, and then what happens in one episode may have a bearing on another episode, right? So you could have a mail sorting robot versus crossword puzzle, right? So this one, what's this one? So this one's going to be episodic because it sorted it, you assume nothing else happens, right? Nothing, no bearing on the next sorting action. Whereas a crossword puzzle is definitely that, right? How do you play, any of you play crossword puzzles? No, how do you play? Do you play with pen or paper or pencil? Pen, yeah, hardcore. Well, yeah, right. So yes, so this has also has an effect. So what word you invent, as opposed to being a real word, is going to have an effect on whether you can actually, you know, fulfill the other side, carry on with your grid, right? And other things are, you know, is the environment static or dynamic, right? A static environment is one which is unchanged while the agent deliberates. So the fact that I'm talking to you right now, definitely this is not a static environment, right? When I'm talking to you, you're changing your opinion of me every second, probably. So that's a dynamic environment, right? So I had another example in the slide, but I was reading, it didn't seem to make sense to me anymore. So I decided to go for something much easier. So your robot car, if it's driving around, then obviously you're hoping that you know, things are always changing all the time. And if you're playing chess, things hopefully remain static. But if you look at Russell and Novick and you read, then there's something which is also known as semi-dynamic. What happens is that if you're playing chess and the clock is ticking, right, then this can affect your performance, your score. Then this is known as a semi-dynamic environment, because even though, you know, nothing is really happening in the environment, but well, time is ticking away, but that's going to have an effect on the score that you have, for instance, right? So, or how you play later on. And another one, which is of course, so that's easy, crossword puzzle. You play Tetris, right? You know, as it gets faster and faster, the more you think, the quicker you die, right? The quicker the thing fills up. So here's one there, because while you're thinking, what orientation, where do I move it or whatever, it's moving at the same time. So here's one there, so while you're thinking, okay? And we're not done yet, right? So, oh, by the way, so you need to be aware of all these various distinctions, however boring they seem to be. So another one is discrete versus continuous. So you know, in the discrete case, the percepts, the action, and episodes are all discrete. You know, it's like, you know, one second I'm here, the next time I look, it's there. It's just there. It's just there. Just there. Just there. But whereas a continuous thing is something that where you do have continuous time, for instance, right? You can't just break into snapshots, right? So for instance, chess is by nature discrete because you move. You know, you just move, and whereas the car has to drive, you know, it has to take into account, you know, that, you know, there are going to be like differential equations and all sorts of things happen, continuous functions, right? And have any of you seen this video on YouTube of this cat that, you know, each time the guy moves the camera out of shot and comes back and the cat has come, it's supposed to be continuous, but the cat is getting closer, and it's called, like, I think it's called a ninja cat or something like that. It's quite funny. You should have a look at this, because the camera moves there, and the cat has moved, and it remains fixed. Right? It's like, you know, it's like somebody's lifted it and put a bridge down. It's quite funny. So this is definitely continuous, but it looks like it looks very discrete. So it's quite a funny one. And the one thing you have to take into account, whether it's a single agent environment or a multi-agent one, right? So how many objects must be modeled as agents? Just because you have a number of agents, that doesn't mean that everything has to be an agent, right? So if I'm looking at modeling this room, maybe each one of you will be an agent, but maybe, you know, I don't need to model the tables or the chairs or whatever, right? Maybe do I need to model this the screen itself as an agent? Probably not, right? Or do I need to model the computer as an agent? So there are questions. Sometimes it's trivial, it's easy to figure out, but sometimes it's not, right? Because something that can have an effect on the environment probably should be modeled as an agent, probably should model this computer, because it could crash just there, and that'll be the end of the lecture, right? And if you're looking at another examples, you know, if you're playing a crossword, then, you know, crossword puzzle, then usually one agent, but if we're talking about poker or whatever, any of these kind of, you know, multi-agent environment. If you're talking about Scrabble, what is it? I don't know. So there is an element of choice over which objects are considered agents or not, right? So, and that depends on it depends on how complicated you want your world to be, right? So don't you see this when you're playing computer games, right? Some are agents, some depends on the game, and sometimes, you know, other things are not agents. So in some games, you know, the animals, you can't even touch them, they can't do, if they're moving around, nothing happens, but in others, you can actually go about and kill them, right? So they actually, something can happen. So it depends. So these choices are made in terms of making the world richer and all this, and the environment more realistic, for instance. So whatever problem, whatever model, whatever scenario you're trying to, whatever world you're trying to build more interesting, and of course, you have trade-offs when you do this. Any questions? No? Well, so what it means is that an agent itself can have any combination of these properties, which makes it quite interesting. So it could be quite benign, right? So here's an example of what it means to be benign. It's like fully observable, deterministic, episodic, static, discrete, and single agent, right? You can see everything, right? And nothing is going to be, you know, randomly happening in the world, right, stochastically. And it's episodic, meaning I do something, nothing else, it doesn't matter what I do next time. And it's static, while I'm thinking, you know, everybody else, you all freeze and wait for my next word. And discrete, you know, one action at a time, nothing continues there. And just a single agent. So, you know, just me, you guys are just there. So, or it could be quite chaotic, right? So it could be like partially observable, stochastic, sequential, dynamic. Basically, just take the opposite of everything that's there, right? So that's particular examples. And the questions are, what are the properties of the environment that will be experienced by each one of these? So if we pick this one, okay, so what would this one be? Fully or partially?
Partially,
right? And deterministic? Stochastic, episodic, sequential? Sequential, yeah, you see, it's easy. Static or dynamic? Easy, dynamic. Discrete or continuous? Continuous. And is it multi-agent or single agent? Multi, right? You know, otherwise, you know, your car can just kill everybody, it doesn't matter. It just can run on the pavement, kill the dog, doesn't matter, nothing matters. It's just a single agent, but it's not, right? So, you maybe ask something in the exam, you know, you're given a particular example, and that's a very good multiple choice kind of question. I come up with some kind of agent which uses a sort of like, which appeals to your common sense to try and figure out how to classify it according to these kind of things, right? So if you look at the past exam questions, you'll see this typical exam, typical, there's not much more that I can ask about this unless I sit down and think a lot, but it's a typical kind of multiple choice question. Anyway, I think it's more or less enough for today. So we've looked at simple reflex agents. We've seen how these are quite good, but not always good, obviously, and move to these ones, and these one, and these one, and these one, and look at the properties of environment. Please make sure that you read a little bit in Russell and Norvig at some point, because it will be helpful. Any questions? No? All right, then see you on, when is it, Thursday? Thursday. You don't know? Thanks.